And we are half past the hour, the 9 o'clock hour here in the Central Time Zone. High time, I say. We got a hold of Don Clark and talked science, which I know is a switch for all of us, because we've been talking about the Book of Daniel for 14, 15, that a lot of information in that. But now we're getting back to Dr. Don's roots in biochemistry. Dr. Don Clark, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, a biochemist. He runs a winery and a vineyard out in Garden Valley, Texas, southeast of Dallas. And the topic, well, we've got two topics today. Seed oils is topic number one. That's an article you suggested, and it carries a lot of weight these days, especially considering MAHA, Make America Healthy Again, the Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s programs with the federal government, and his attack on seed oils. I had to look up seed oils. Now, I know of a couple of seed oils, but I found a website called Heart and Soul. It talks about seed oils weren't even meant for human consumption. They were byproducts of manufacturing up until the Industrial Revolution, but by the mid-1900s, it reads here, seed oils had become a staple ingredient in packaged foods, reshaping the Western diet in ways that are raising new health concerns today. Are they toxic? Well, in their view, yeah. So what are seed oils? Well, I'll list a few here. Canola oil, corn oil, cottonseed oil, flaxseed oil, grapeseed oil, hemp seed oil, rice bran oil, haven't heard of that one, safflower oil, sesame oil, soybean oil, sunflower. Now, it doesn't mention olive oil. Is olive oil a seed oil?
Olive oil is not a seed oil. The oil is actually in the meat of the olive.
Okay. And then avocado oil, I guess maybe it's a separate category here on this, olive oil and avocado oil, because it comes from the flesh, even though it's probably crushed along with the seed, huh?
Well, it can be. Obviously, avocado oil you can just get from the meat without, worrying about the seed.
Okay.
And olives, of course, you might have some seed crushing in there, but the key to olive oil is to get the extra virgin. You know, back in the day, they people would not, an extra all the extra virgin means it's the first press from
first pressing,
the press.
Yeah.
You know, virgin is this is the second press, and when you get away from virgin, in the old world, they'd use it for lubricants and oil for their lamps, but they would not consume it. It was only the first fret.
Now,
first
this article says olive and avocado oils are not seed oils. They come from fruit and are less processed. They contain significantly lower amounts of linoleic acid. But as we've talked about this in the past, if you use olive oil to saute, it gets hot, and it changes its nature and then becomes a threat to your health. Is that accurate?
Oh, it might. And the problem with these oils, linoleic acid, is a polyunsaturated fatty acid, or a PUFA. So the more double bonds you have in your fatty acid, the greater the possibility of it oxidizing and causing, when you heat it up, it could go to a trans fat. I mean, a unsaturated fatty acid, you need some unsaturated fatty acids. But the natural configuration of a fatty acid, now we're getting into chemistry, is the cis configuration. And when you heat them up, they can go to the trans configuration. What does that mean in layman's term? If you take a unsaturated fatty acid, it's a liquid, typically at room temperature, those that haven't been processed. But if you heat it up and then, poured it in a jar, for example, it would become a solid. Why is that? Because normally, your fatty acid that is unsaturated would have a kink in it, and now you've turned that fatty acid into a solid long chain. And so the long chains can pack much closer together and thereby solidify. Like lard, for example, lard is not a saturated fat. It is an unsaturated fat, and the unsaturated fats tend to be, depending on the length of the hydrocarbon chain on the fat tend to be solids at room temperature.
What does hydrogenated mean? Because then I understand with lard, when you buy the kind that doesn't need refrigeration, it's a solid block, that's not good for you.
It depends. If it nothing hydrogenated is good for you.
Ah.
So don't buy anything that says hydrogenated, because what they've done, that's a synthetic process. They've essentially taken the double bond that normally would be in some natural fats, and they chemically treat it so that the double bond now is a regular single bond, and they've hydrogenated, which means they put hydrogens in. You needed two extra hydrogens to go from a double bond to a single bond. And so that's exactly, you know, what they actually do. Actually, it's four hydrogens. So you've now changed a saturated.
What's the reason for doing that, though? Is that to preserve shelf life? Is that the only purpose?
It is to preserve the shelf life, because the unsaturated fatty acids are unstable. They like I said, if you heat them up, they could go to the trans portion, and then you could have solids dropping out of your oil, your liquid oil, or they can oxidize, which causes even more problems with these fatty acids. So, but let's go back to seed oils, which is the main topic here. So what's the problem with PUFAs, polyunsaturated fatty acids, in particular linoleic acid? And this has been a controversy going on for quite some time. And, you know, since they started making these oils, they're saying, oh, they're good for your heart, they're good for your brain. And in reality, yes, you need some linoleic acid for your heart and for your brain, but the problem is too much. And in our diet these days, we get, if you're just eating processed food, now, you know, you could have a processed Twinkie and it can have linoleic acid in it because it's made with these oils. It's made with polyunsaturated fatty acids. And they are probably, you know, chemically modified in the cooking process and everything. And so they're not in a good form that your body really needs. And so you wind up building up linoleic acid. And linoleic acid goes to the metabolic pathway is that it goes to arachidonic acid. Then arachidonic acid can produce inflammatory compounds, cause inflammation in your body, and they can also induce non-inflammatory compounds. But, you know, which direction it goes in obviously depends on how much fatty acid that you have, and the more linoleic acid you have, the greater your possibility of getting the inflammatory chemicals produced from metabolites of linoleic acid. Linoleic acid is also in the category of omega-6 fatty acids, and you've heard that, gee, it would be great if you had more omega-3s in your diet. And omega-3s metabolize that, and it's, you know, it's also called linoleic acid, but it's alpha linoleic acid as opposed to linoleic acid. And the omega-3 or 6 refers to where the double bond is in the unsaturated fat. So alpha linoleic acid produces EPA or DHA. Both of these are anti-inflammatory chemicals in your body. Now, it turns out, and this will lead us to our next program, our next topic. It turns out that systemic inflammation is the cause of all kinds of chronic diseases. It, you know, not only is it is it the cause of arthritis, for example, but it's the cause of heart disease. You know, when you go to the doctor and you say, oh, your cholesterol is too high, we need to do something to reduce the cholesterol. The cholesterol isn't the problem. It's the inflammation in your body that's the problem. Now, that inflammation may be coming from, oh, you got a lot of stress in your environment, and therefore you're producing a lot of cortisol, and the cortisol is then causing inflammation, which is then attacking your blood vessels, and then your body is saying, hey, I need some cholesterol to patch up the blood vessels, and thereby, ultimately, if this condition continues, will lead to a blocking of the arteries, which causes the heart problem as well as strokes and those type of things. So cardiovascular disease is a disease of inflammation. Cancer is a disease of inflammation. From the point of view, your immune system is not working properly to identify the foreign cells that are constantly, the rogue cells, I should say, not foreign, the rogue cells that are constantly being produced in your body. But a normal immune system keeps those cells in check. But if your inflammation, if your immune system is weak because you're in a chronic inflammation state, and so it doesn't have enough energy, if you will, to attack the rogue cells in your body, guess what? The rogue cells in your body start multiplying and, you know, left to themselves would want to take over every possible thing in your body, including, you know, causing the appearance of cancer. I mean, that's all cancer is. It's an immune problem, and not. But you know, to stimulate, of course, you've got toxins and stuff in the environment that can stimulate cells to go rogue on you. And so, the more toxins you have in your system, then the greater your chance of getting cancer. That's why, you know, smoke. Your body normally, you know, cannot utilize smoke too well. And so it's a toxin to the body. And so it says, okay, I give up. I'm fighting this constant irritation. And the immune system finally says, I can't take it anymore. And then that's when the lung cancer or the throat cancer or the mouth cancer starts appearing, is when your immune system finally breaks down and says, enough is enough. So, but you don't want to be taking ingredients in your food, for example, that is going to exacerbate any type of inflammation.
It sounds like the extensive use of seed oils came into being along with, and maybe because of, industrially processed foods in the 50s is when this started to become a big problem. Before that, I guess with canned goods and food from scratch, you know, you'd buy unprocessed food, cook it yourself, and you were okay. But once you started buying processed, and I guess the word processed puzzles me a little bit, because there must be a limit to what's processed and what's not. I guess you can handle food straight from farm to table that would be not processed, including vegetables and greens and the like. But if you package it in saran wrap or put it in some other kind of container, you've got to preserve it somehow. And so the need for seed oils arises, but in part because of the cost, correct?
Well, so if you look back, yes. Okay, so the 50s, early, you know, late 40s, if you remember, we were in a war in mid 40s, right? Mm-hmm. A world war. Well, that actually started the chemical revolution because, you know, rubber for tires was invented or was discovered, if you will. You know, if you take rubber from a rubber tree and cross link it and all this other stuff, you get rubber for your tires. And then they learned, oh, we can make rubber synthetically. And so the chemical industry was kind of birthed out of the Second World War. And then that led to all kinds of exploration as to, well, what else can we make? And part of what else can we make was, you know what? We got a lot of corn. And if we take some of this corn instead of putting it into food and animal feed, if we then can, you know, take the oil from corn and kind of package that and also make it stable by partially hydrogenating it, then, you know, we've got another food product here, and we got a lot of it, and it's going to be cheap. And so this started happening in the 50s, and then those type of products started to get into our food supply. You know, pretty much up into that point, we were eating lard, we were eating animal fat, we were eating tallow, which is basically animal fat. We were eating natural fats. And yes, over in Italy and over in the Mediterranean, they had a lot of olives. And so they ate for centuries. I mean, for, you know, 2,000 plus 6,000 years, they were eating olive oil as their primary oil, as opposed to these, you know, crushing these seeds and then turning those into consumer type products. And so we both our food was more natural, because you would go to your local farmer's market, for example, if you didn't grow it yourself, and a lot of people had little, I mean, not so little, but had farms. That was part of life, was you had a piece of property and you farmed it, and then the vegetables that you grew then became products that you would eat, not only right when they were fresh, but you canned them, and it was a lot of work. And so out of convenience, these other things started to come about. We started to have canned beans, we started to have canned goods, and then the canned things turned into other types of products, which out of convenience, we can go to the grocery store, and if you go down the middle of the aisles, you can find all kinds of processed food. The best thing that anyone can do to try to get away, but a lot of these processed foods were inflammatory. They caused inflammation within the body, including milk, for example, and milk has gotten a lot worse. That's another subject all to itself. We won't get into that.
That involves pasteurization, doesn't it?
And the pasteurization process has changed over the years. It used to be that they heated it up a little bit, a couple of cycles of many cycles of heating and cooling, heating, cooling. Now they just blast it with heat, and it completely destroys any nutritional value in the milk product.
And if it's marked ultra pasteurized, don't buy it.
Yeah, don't buy it. I mean, you're better off, really. I mean, you're better off taking the risk and finding whole milk, I mean, raw milk from someplace than you are from.
No, that's got to be another phase. I know you didn't want to get into milk here, but it's another phase of the Make America Healthy Again program that RFK Jr. is instituting. And the sales of raw milk should be somehow brought into focus and approved for sale, not so restricted, because the big dairy associations can't live with it.
Well, because of the regulations that have been, you know, put into place to, you know, try to protect the health of American people, they've done things like ultra pasteurization, you know, heating up the milk into very high temperatures, destroying any health qualities of it whatsoever. Homogenization, you know, takes the natural fat that is in the milk and that would naturally settle out and breaks it up into tiny little particles that fat now can rush into your bloodstream. Before, most of the fat just went through your digestive system and that was the end of it. But now we got to reduce the amount of fat in the milk, because if you have too much, then it's going to be too much fat for your system and you got all kinds of, you know, problems from that. So, you know, man's knowledge, I mean, this goes back to, you know, keep it simple, keep it the way God created it. Because
it's ironic, that science has the power to protect us and at the same time kill us, and it's doing both.
Yes, exactly. And we're you know, maybe we're so puffed up with ourselves that we think that we can do a better job than what God has done. And the answer to that is always, we cannot. Hmm. We cannot. Stick with the natural products, stick with the natural food, stick with the outside of the end, you know, part of your grocery store that has the vegetables and the meats and, you know, and various things that you don't want to go into the inner part of the grocery store where all the processed stuff is. So are we ready? I don't know if we probably haven't beaten that one to death, but we have at least talked about that. But my main point in all of this, linoleic acid, the omega-6, you know, we are saturated with omega-6s. So we have in our diets these days, the not normal, there's nothing normal about it, but the normal American diet has between a 15 to 17 to 1 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3s. And hence the major issues that we're having, because you have that much omega-6 in your diet, you're going to have inflammation in your body. And so you need to get that ratio down to, you know, 3, 4, maybe 6 to 1. And the way you do that is you decrease the linoleic acids. You take out the seed oils from your diet, for example. You replace it with decent oils, fresh, pure, organic, let's say olive oil or tallow. And if you're going to cook things on the stove, coconut oil, things like that. And pretty much the opposite of what we've been told for the last 50 or so years to do, and go back to the way things were before all of this chemical, the industrial chemical revolution, you know, took place here in America.
So in a way, this set us up for COVID, didn't it?
It set us up because our immune systems were stressed already. Mm. And so when you got to COVID, a humanized, if you will, a bat virus, there is no doubt now. There shouldn't be any doubt in anybody's mind that COVID-19 was manufactured in a lab. It was genetically modified, let's put it that way. And it was genetically modified so that the spike protein, the outer coat of the virus, would stick to human cells. So it would stick to humanized cells in mice, for example, and it would stick to human cells and therefore be infective. Now, only those that are evil would say that was a good idea. And of course, this came out of the Wuhan lab, which was funded partially by the United States, and we gave them the technology in order to do this. So they, you know, the virus gets released, and then along comes not too much, you know, longer after that, these modified RNA vaccines, end quote. And they said, look, we got you covered. The COVID's out there, COVID-19. We've got this vaccine that all you need to do is get the vaccine and you're going to be protected from COVID-19. That didn't last too long because the vaccine, the modified RNA vaccines, that's what the M stands for. It is, yes, it is a messenger RNA, but it's a modified messenger RNA. Should be mRNA and not just mRNAs, because you get the wrong idea from that. But so this was a messenger RNA, and the RNA coded for none other than the spike protein. And what was so bad about the spike protein? Well, the spike protein in itself attack nerve cells. It's what's called a prion, and it binds to nerve cells. So you develop this vaccine, and now your cells are manufacturing a poison, a toxin in your body. And so you've got this stuff floating around, and it's your immune system is going crazy. And it's saying, what is all of this foreign body in my body doing here? I got to do something about it. So your immune system kicks up. And people, even with the virus, the main problem wasn't that the virus was going to kill people. It was that your immune system response to the virus and to the spike protein that in many people, your immune system just went wild. And it was an overstimulation of the immune system that actually wound up killing people. Now, so there were two things.
Recent report in the Journal of Risk and Safety in Medicine, and I'm looking at some of the numbers from it here. And the basic conclusion is that COVID death rates increased with vaccination. And they've got some stats on it now. In Africa, the death rate after vaccination increased by 43%. The greatest percent, and this is from the UN information, and it's segmented to different areas of the world. Western Pacific area, 1,275% increase in death among vaccinated patients. So yes. This is still a problem, isn't it?
It's still a problem, and it is. So you had two problems with the vaccine. One, you're producing these spike proteins. Two, you're depleting your immune system. And therein is one of the major problems of people that have been vaccinated. Their immune systems is out of whack. And so the immune system puts so much effort in trying to get rid of this spike protein that it can't take care of the normal stuff that your immune system might protect you from. For example, cancer being one of them. You know, as I said earlier, cancer is a problem of the immune system. So they found that after vaccination, people that were in remission for cancer, their cancers flared up and went crazy after being vaccinated because their immune system was suppressed and could not deal with yet another insult to the body. And so the body just kind of gave up. And many, many people died of cancer. Now, the other problem with the vaccine and the other problem with COVID itself was that it did cause blood clots. And you heard about this, you know, early on in the aftermath of COVID, for example, that people's blood would just automatically, you know, start clotting, and, you know, they wind up dying because their, you know, blood's not flowing. It's turning into a gel inside their blood vessels and everything. And honest autopsies done on these people found strands and strands of blood clots throughout their body. And all due to the spike protein. It was a kind of a, not after effect of the spike protein, but it caused these type of blood clots to occur. Now, the FDA itself is saying that the risk from the vaccines, risk of suffering a sudden and unexpected death, you're at risk for up to 15 years. And I don't know where they got the 15-year number, but up to 15 years after receiving the last injection. Who on this, you know, earth would want to ever take any type of modified messenger RNA vaccine again?
Are they still making that vaccine? Because I think there are still commercials on, not from the government, but from Pfizer and maybe Moderna as well.
Yes, they're still making the vaccine. The vaccine has been approved. They were using the experimental vaccine because they wouldn't have liability with that. And I don't know if that persists
because they're still used because of the emergency declaration by the FDA. And I think that's something that will be, if it hasn't been looked at already and reversed, it will be shortly.
Yes. Well, and hopefully some people will be compensated for the lies that were portrayed during this whole COVID thing. And yet the WHO, despite the swell of scientific evidence highlighting the risk of the injections, the WHO still insists that the vaccines are safe.
Well, that's not the case. And science, again, is helping us and killing us at the same time. And I think we need to take a long look at maybe opposing views in science, because there's a half of science that gets squelched with respect to public information and education. So hopefully we're helping that cause just a little bit here with our conversations with Dr. Don. Dr. Don, a member of the board at Creation Moments. Their website, creationmoments.com. I just checked, the new website is not up yet, but it's supposed to be up there soon. And we recommend that website wholeheartedly. There you'll find scientific information that helps you learn and really enables you to teach and explain the biblical story of creation. creationmoments.com. And again, Don, the member of the board and a good friend of the station, and he brings us valuable information just about every week now on Tuesday morning. So Don, we're grateful. We'll look forward to next week. Take care of yourself, okay?
Okay, you folks take care as well.
Stay away from those seed oils, for Pete's sakes.
Absolutely.